Hello, and welcome back to my podcast, Honestly Though. I'm your host, Jyoti Wall, and today I wanted to dedicate an entire episode to kind of a sit-down Q&A, question and answer session with you. Now, most, if not all of you who are listening, are probably listening to me because you follow me on Instagram, and if you do, then you know that I don't entirely have a niche in terms of my content on social media. I just share a lot of my interests. I've been utilizing social media as kind of a public platform now for over 5-6 years. Over the course of that time, I just share my interests, my life, really just things that excite me or I'm passionate about during any given stage of my life. And if I were to be asked what I mostly share about or what I've been mostly sharing about over the course of like the past year or so, I'd say it's really been anywhere from motherhood, pregnancy, birth, postpartum, health and wellness, maybe lower tox living, homeschooling, fiber art, supplements, where I live, farm living, like products I love and use, clothing, I don't know, like Amazon links, what it looks like to join network marketing and using Instagram for social selling, kind of all of it. And I feel like anytime I post a question and answer box on Instagram, I'm always fascinated by the questions that roll through because they are a wide variety of questions panning so many different topics and all the things. And I feel like they just, in some ways, give me a good gauge of topics that interest you guys. What helps me to narrow down and figure out what you guys are here for, what you want to listen to, what you want me to talk more about. I like that and it's helpful. So the other day I posted a comment box on my stories and I asked you guys all straight up, okay, I'm going to be doing this for my podcast and to just fill it up with questions, anything and everything. So I could just come on here and fire through, and I guess respond to them in real time. But I do this every so often just as a story post, just a story post on my Instagram. But I find I usually want to give a more like lengthier response to some, but obviously Instagram caps that for me and I can't. Yeah, so I thought this would be more fun. We'll see how it goes. We will see. I'm going to try to get through most of them. A lot of questions were asked multiple times. So yeah, they may have just been phrased differently. But let's just go for it. So number one, what drew you to give your kids the names that they have? Do they have meanings in their middle names? Okay, so we have 4 kids and, all 4 of them, this is funny. If you've been here a minute, you know that their names all have 4 letters and we did not plan that. It's funny because, Mark, my husband, his name obviously has 4 letters. My name is Jyoti. My full name, if you didn't know, actually is Harjot. But Jyoti has been my given name for most of my life. And that's obviously 4 letters. So Mark and Jyoti. And then we named our eldest Avin, which is also 4 letters, A-V-Y-N. And then our second, we named her Nova, N-O-V-A, which is funny because after we gave birth to her, after we named her, I don't know, it was like months after, someone said, hey, did you realize that Nova's name backwards is actually Avin, like spelt differently, kind of like Avon, right? N-O-V-A-A-V-O-N. Yeah. Anyways, that was not planned. But then when we were having our 3rd, I realized, oh my gosh, like all of us have 4-letter names. We have to give our 3rd child a 4-letter name. I don't know. I just kind of felt like we needed to do that so they didn't feel left out. So that was Rhea. And then Kylo is our youngest. So yeah, I will say for the most part, we didn't actually like, I don't know, there's not any like crazy deep meaning to any of our kids' names. They were truly just names that we liked the sounds of. Obviously afterwards we, you know, researched them and saw the meanings behind them. But yeah, Avin was one of my cousins. His son's name is Avin. So years ago before we were, I think even married, Mark and I were like thinking, we're just chatting about names and he's like, I really like the name Avin. I did have a couple conditions and some of you might laugh at this, but I wanted our kids to have names that were like, I didn't want them to be Indian. I didn't want them to be Punjabi, which is my background, but I also didn't want them to be like super Western. I kind of wanted them to be unique in the middle. And so I feel like our kids' names kind of, you know, are like that. Avin, Nova, Rhea and Kylo. And it's funny because Rhea was kind of inspired by Rey. I really like the name Rey from Star Wars. I'm not a Star Wars junkie by any means. I've like barely watched them, but I really like the name Rey. But of course, we had to stick to our four letters. And I thought, you know what? Why don't we name her Rhea and we'll call her Ray? So we do that. We call her Rhea, Ray Ray. And yeah, so that kind of worked. And then it's funny because we had Kylo and we knew we were having a boy. We had a couple names narrowed down. I really liked the name Luca. I liked Nico. And then I think Mark had the final say with this one. And it was also inspired by Star Wars, Kylo, which is funny. And it's extra funny because we actually used to have a dog who, our old dog, lives with Mark's mom and stepdad in Ohio now. But his name is Yoda. So apparently we're just sticking with this Star Wars theme. So yeah, those are our kids' first names. And then their middle names are the ones where I didn't, like, in my culture, you don't really have middle names. If you're a Sikh, if you are born into Sikhism, you are automatically given a middle name. Boys are given the middle name Singh and girls are given the middle name Kaur. So yeah, anyways, I come from a culture where you don't really have middle names. I was like, I don't really want to give my kids middle names, but if we do give them middle names, I want them to have some meaning. And for me, it was important for that to be a family name. So yeah, our kids' middle names are, I guess they're more meaningful in the sense that they are a link to family members. So our eldest, his middle name is Richard, and that is Mark's older brother's name. Nova's middle name is Violet, and that is Mark's maternal grandmother's name. Rhea's middle name is Mehit. That's my mom's maiden name, actually. And then Kylo's middle name is Kenneth, and that is Mark's dad's name as well as Mark's middle name. So anyways, fun little tidbits. Let's go on to number two. If you could shift gears in your career, what would it be? Oh man, this is a good one. Not a good one to ask me though, because I get excited about a lot of things. If you know me in real life, you know this to be true. Currently, I really do love working with women in terms of postpartum health and health in general, and helping to come alongside them and maybe provide helpful tools, products, supplements, tips to get their spark back, incorporating healthy habits. I love to run like challenge groups. And I also love working with women on my team and my network marketing business. It's a business model that's completely changed my life, and being able to help other women achieve goals they set after and seeing them grow and earn income from their phones, all of that. I don't know. There's nothing like it. It's given me an opportunity to build a really awesome community of like-minded, driven women. We prioritize our health together. Most of us are young moms. It's encouraging and motivating to do that alongside other people. I really, truly love it. But anyways, I guess to answer this question, one thing that I absolutely love is pregnancy and birth. I don't know what exactly I could work as in that capacity. How cool though, I don't know, could it be maybe one day to go back to school years from now to become a medical professional or maybe a midwife or something, a doula, I don't know, even simply a birth educator. I just freaking love everything about birth. I had four drastically different birth experiences myself. I should probably dedicate an entire podcast episode to that, but it's just something that I could for sure see myself working in some capacity, and I really do love. Next up, number three, pet portraits. I've been wanting one for years. Will you ever start offering them again? Yes, I do plan to. If you don't know what this is referring to, I'm a fiber artist. You can scroll way back on my Instagram. I've shared, you know, over the course of my years on social media, a huge component of what I've done and shared has been my fiber art. I like calling it painting with wool. Probably my biggest bestseller. Family portraits was a big one, but pet portraits was huge. And I really genuinely love it. It's so fun to do. I know that it brings my customers so much joy, and I've created a lot of memorial pieces for pets that have passed away. Anyways, I love doing it. However, these pieces take me anywhere between 5 to 8 hours to do. And as you can imagine, as a mom of four, who's mostly home with her kids, that's really hard to carve out time to do. But yes, I do plan to. I kind of consider myself to still be on mat leave right now, though. Like, I need time to figure out my bearings, having an infant, and just like the logistics of life and work and homeschool, all of it. I think once Kylo is a bit older, it'll be easier to do. I absolutely love stitching, and I don't want to ever give it up. I still have this dream to one day have alpacas and to gather my own wool from them and to use that in my pieces. But Anyways, even though it may not look the same and I may not have the ability to open up for more like frequent launches like I have in the past, I still do plan to. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I do have a broadcast channel on my Instagram. It's titled Wool Art Updates. So you can subscribe to that. That's probably where I'll like, that'll be the first place I go when I launch, whenever it is that I decide to do that. Number four, what was your most difficult transition with your kids? I love getting asked this because I think people assume it's going to be the more kids I've had, when in reality it was 100% going from zero to one, my first kid. And the reason why I say that, and I think a lot of parents can relate, is having your first kid, like you are going from a life of complete freedom where you're really not living for anyone but yourself, to all of a sudden you have a child. You have a whole human being that is relying solely on you, and everything is new. And there's so many different layers to why it might be difficult. And I know for some people, maybe it's not as difficult, but for me, it was incredibly difficult. The mental load, the postpartum, the unexpected. I had birth trauma, I had a C-section. There was just so much around it. It was definitely the most difficult. And obviously with, you know, having more kids, it is going to become, your hands are full and there is a lot going on and it's pure chaos. But I still would say having my first kid was the hardest transition. Number five, what do you find to be the most difficult part of being a mom? The most difficult part of being a mom for me, just kind of ties into the one above, I guess, like it's chaos. It is chaos. But honestly, I would say negative mindset. I was raised in an environment, not to bash anyone, you know, but this was just the reality of my upbringing. It was negative in the sense of a lot of no's. You can't do this. You can't go there. Don't look like this. Don't do this. Whatever. I don't know. I think a lot of that paired with a huge lack of emotional regulation skills and emotional intelligence has led to me just naturally. Some of you might be surprised to hear this, being more naturally inclined to have a negative mindset, where like I will spiral sometimes and think like, oh my gosh, like why are my kids acting this way? Nobody cares. No one's cleaning up after themselves. They expect me to do everything. That's what I mean. Like just constant negativity. And I have had to really work on that. And so many things that I've learned over the past few years, like honestly doing 75 hard, like mental grit, building mental grit, and like that stuff, some people see it and they think it's only really applicable to like fitness and whatever. It's not, you guys. Like this is something that I'd love to do a full chat about. I think it would be really, really good and valuable. But I never realized until I became a mom how truly emotionally immature I was. I'm going to say it. I am still learning and growing. And my kids, of course, really push me to become the best version of myself. But sometimes I look at myself and I am not happy with who I see. And it's hard. It is really, really hard some days. I think I remember someone once saying that like the most powerful thing you can do as a parent is to just stay silent. Don't respond. Your kids are being loud and obnoxious, or you are feeling annoyed, or all the emotions are coming up, like rage, all of it. Like I've had postpartum rage. When you feel like yelling or lashing out, don't, just keep your mouth shut. Just do not utter a word. Especially if you are someone like me and maybe you're naturally wired with that negative mindset, even if it's not what you're saying, it's the tone in which you're saying it. It's better to just not say anything. Just zip it. Okay. And that's obviously easier said than done, of course, but it is so powerful. And yeah, that also, like, as well as just remaining calm, reminding myself my kids need me. They literally need me to stay calm. That is my job. My only job in the world is to just stay calm for my kids. And of course, like I can show them feeling anger and frustration is a normal part of being a human, but how we react is everything. And I don't know if this really answers the question, and I'm going to have to do a little bit more of a thorough breakdown if I dedicate an episode to this, but I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. So I think one of the hardest parts of being a parent is working on yourself and learning like to be more patient and to have a more positive mindset and to like quickly turn the day around, because so many things can make it go any which way. Moving on. Number six, what's the age gap between your kids and do you like it? So my kids are all pretty well, give or take a little bit, 2 years apart. The two eldest are 23 months apart. So yeah, basically 2 years apart. And then Nova and Rhea are 20 months apart, so a little bit less. And then Rhea and Kylo, my last age gap is 2.5 years. So I mean, a little bit more or less than 2 years. I love it. My siblings and I, there's 4 of us, and we are all 2 years apart. And now that we're adults, I think it's the best. I think it's the absolute best. Obviously, when you're there younger, it's going to be, again, chaos and wilding all the time, and we have our hands full. But I know as they grow older, and even now, like, they are the best of friends. And my prayer and my hope is that they will just continue to be the best of friends. And I look at my siblings and I, and we are all the best of friends. And yeah, that's what I pray for and what I hope for. Number 7, how does a person get started being present on social media? I don't really know. I'm assuming this means obviously in terms of like building a platform, making money off of it. My advice is to just start. Honestly, don't get so in your head about it. Kind of how I started this podcast, you just go for it. You will figure it out as you go. Post about the things you love and I guess the things you enjoy and stay consistent with it. Post often, post frequently. Yes, sometimes it takes trial and error. Yes, you're going to have to learn the ways of Instagram and how to create reels and content. And that does take some time. There's courses out there you can learn to do that. I'm sure you can hire people to learn. But honestly, like just do it. Just do the damn thing. Also, I think engaging with brands or influencers or accounts that you relate to, that takes time, but like that's an important factor. Like follow accounts that are within your niche if you have a niche, or like, you know, that you like, that you want to, like you want to engage with. Not just posting, but like, yeah, engaging, because that's how you're going to get your content out there, your account, your name out there, and tagging brands. Like if you are focusing on fashion, for example, always tag the brands, constantly tag brands. Like you're eating something, you're doing a Costco haul, tag all the brands that you are sharing. Another thing is I feel like now we live in this age where lots of content goes viral. Okay. I'm just going to talk about this for a little bit. Like people will have an account that's not even meant to be a public platform, and it's just like for their friends and family. They might post a funny reel and then all of a sudden it gains like millions of views, and then they've brought in like 10,000 new followers, and they didn't mean to build an account, but they all of a sudden have this audience now. But that doesn't mean that they are an influencer. That doesn't mean that they are automatically going to be handed brand deals and paid campaigns. Like that's not how it works. I think it's important to like, yeah, a lot of people out there might get a lot of followers because they have viral content. However, follower count does not equal influence. Okay. That's really important to always know and understand, because I think if you're actually serious about building a social media presence and you want it to become a lucrative income, at the end of the day, it's not about reels going viral or content going viral. You need to build a brand, and that's what people are buying. People need to be invested in you, the story you are selling them. If you're trying to sell them products, they're honestly buying you and the reason behind the product, okay? More so than the product itself. So you need to be, I don't know, you need to be vulnerable and share more about yourself, your life. I get that some people just are more private than others. I'm definitely an oversharer by nature, so it doesn't really faze me sharing the amount that I do. Obviously, I do have boundaries and I feel quite comfortable with where I'm at and how much I share in my life. But does that kind of answer the question? I think you just need to go for it. And I also think you need to engage and tag and post relevant content and be consistent with the content you post. There's a lot of things. Yeah. At the end of the day, just go for it and just start. Number 8, can you share more about balancing, trying to feel positive in my postpartum body and the motivation to exercise? This is relatable because I am postpartum and I'm going through this too. I guess a couple things. I am all for loving yourself and your body as it is. And yes, I 100% stand by that. Like love your body as it is. Be grateful for your body as it is. But I do not love how sometimes that is twisted into this narrative that it's bad to want to change or lose weight. Okay? There's a difference there, you guys. Yes, you can absolutely love your body and also want to change it. What I mean by that is you might be like, hey, I had a baby and I like freaking grew a human. I'm so deeply grateful for that. I'm so deeply grateful to be able to keep and sustain my child, like me with my baby right now and nourishing him and breastfeeding. However, I also don't feel like myself in my skin. I know that I'm 30 pounds heavier. I know that I like am capable of getting stronger, and I want to feel that, and I want to see the muscles. Lately, I've been sharing a lot more about this on my Instagram. I've been sharing a lot more about my weight loss journey. And honestly, I held off for a long time because I just know the stigma. And I know that we live in this like really high body positivity society right now. And I'm not opposed to that. Again, I think it's important and it's amazing. And we need to hear more of that. However, sometimes I think it's on this like, I don't know. I feel like, I just feel it can get twisted, and it can be like, yes, I'm body positive, but that means I can just do whatever I want and eat whatever I want. And that's not right. I think like you have to really be honest with yourself and ask yourself, how do you feel? Like, do you feel like you have energy? This isn't just about weight loss, you guys. Do you have energy? Are you able to keep up with your kids? Are you like dragging yourself out of bed in the morning? Are you sleeping okay? You know, like there's so many other elements to it. And I know that like people would message me and say, oh my gosh, Jyoti, you look amazing though. You don't need to lose weight. And there's also people out there who see others who share about their weight loss journeys, like myself right now. And they think, oh, they're being obsessive, or they don't love themselves, or they're working out too much, or... And to me, that's just ridiculous. I think you can, again, absolutely love yourself and your body and be grateful for it while also recognizing you want to live optimally. Again, I'm currently, I'd say about 20 to 25 pounds heavier than the range where I know I feel my best, where I feel my strongest, where my lung capacity and my stamina allows me to run further and faster, where I have more energy and honestly just less brain fog, where I don't feel sore or I get injured as fast. I'm not interested in average living or being quote unquote okay. I want every single area of my life, my mental health, my physical health, my relationships, my spiritual health, all of them. I want it to be optimal. And that is what I strive for. If I'm being obsessive when I say that, I don't care. But that is what I strive for. And that's what I work towards in terms of my physical health as well. In terms of balancing and motivation, I guess... I think we all start at different points. I don't know your history or your background with any of that. This person asked about motivation. But I guess my suggestion is to just start small. Get 1% better every single day. If you have not read the book Atomic Habits, I'm telling you guys, this book is a game changer. I've read or listened to it like a dozen times. So just implement one habit, one simple habit, something realistic for you and where you're at in your life, that you are able to incorporate into your day-to-day. Maybe it's hitting 5K steps a day for a week, or drinking 3 liters of water a day, or strength training 3 times a week, or whatever it is. Habits, they take time. But building the small habits one at a time is what's going to help them stick and to help you not feel as overwhelmed or for it to not be as daunting. I also think motivation, it comes and goes, okay? Don't always look for motivation. It's discipline. It's the understanding that change takes time. That is what's going to keep you going. I'm 7 months postpartum. I've barely lost 10 pounds. And despite all my efforts, you guys, you see me. I eat well. I exercise. I do all the things. I feel much better. I do. But I still have a long way to go. And I know it's going to happen, and it will. But another thing is, it's going to take longer than you think. And tell yourself that this isn't about like doing a 6-month program to lose an X amount of weight. This is the rest of your life. This isn't something like you're just going to build these habits to last you like the next year. No, these are habits that you want to keep like implemented forever. Like you want, you know, movement and, you know, eating well and nourishing your body to be a lifelong habit, not something that you're just doing for a short period of time so you can hit some goal, you know? Okay. Number 9. Wow. How do you navigate sharing your kids online? Okay. This is a big one. Something I get asked about often actually in my DMs. And I've had great conversations with people about this, influencers and just followers as well. If you've been here a while, you know that I used to share much more about my kids back when I just had one or two, more day to day in our stories and videos of them. And, I guess just insight into what our days at home looked like what we were up to. Well, I feel like my following grew. And the reality is, I don't know. I don't know who's out there and I don't know who's watching. Like, truth be told, that is it. I do not know the eyes that are out there. Yes, I have over 70,000 followers, but also people who just pass by my account, you know? Like, I don't know who's out there. At the end of the day, I decided it's not that I never share my family or my kids. You might see their faces here and there, like in family pictures and whatever, but my content, it no longer revolves around them. I don't do brand deals with them. I deleted all campaigns I'd done in the past where my kids were involved. And I don't use them anymore in them. Maybe this means I don't get as many brand deals, but I don't really care. I think something I realized, this was a big thing for me. This is when I recognized it, okay? I'm going to be honest with you. There are influencers who I follow, who I adore, who've become friends of mine, and they're located in all different areas of the world, Canada, the States, wherever. And I love them and their content and they're amazing people. And I might know them in the sense that I know them off of Instagram and we become, you know, quote unquote, Instagram friends, but I don't actually know them. And I don't actually know their kids, but I feel like I know their kids because they share so much of their kids and the way in which they share so much of their kids, you know, like day-to-day things in their stories or their kids talking to the camera, or like, I know how their kids talk, or I know what their kids are interested in. They're, you know, like, do you know what I mean? Like their personalities and stuff. And it makes me feel like I know them. And if obviously me feeling like I know them as an innocent mom here, like, you know, that's one thing, but what about other people who maybe aren't as innocent, who might also feel like they know them? And this is a part of the internet that maybe people don't talk a whole lot about, but we need to, and it's the reality of it. And raising a generation and, you know, in a way that we weren't raised in this or with this level of like internet. Yeah, I'm like losing my train of thought, but I think you know what I mean. Like, it's my job to protect my kids. And when I think about the way that I know, or I feel like I know other people's kids out there, kids who have not consented to being on the internet and they're just kids, it made me realize, like, I don't want anyone, honestly, I don't want anyone to feel like they know my kid. And that's me being a protective mom, a protective parent. Yeah. Even if they're like, quote unquote, my friends on the internet or have become friendly followers, I don't want them to feel like they actually know my child. They might know my kid's name and that's whatever. I don't really care. Maybe they know what they look like, but I don't want them to feel like they know them on like a personal level. It doesn't sit right. At the end of the day, it just doesn't sit right with me. This is not for me to like cast any shame on anyone who chooses different, but I personally don't feel peace about it. So I chose to just take a step back. Yeah. So again, you might see them here and there, but for their privacy and just out of respect for them in general, I choose not to anymore. Number 10, do your kids know how to speak Punjabi? No, they do not. I think I've shared before with you guys, Punjabi was my first language. My parents are immigrants from India, from Punjab, and they moved to Canada. They didn't speak any English, so we were raised with Punjabi as our first language. And obviously, I grew up in Canada, so I was raised with both English and Punjabi, English outside of the household, Punjabi inside the household. And so growing up, I learned how to obviously speak it, read it, write it, all the things. But I'm 34 years old now. I would not necessarily say I'm fluent in Punjabi. Yes, I can speak it. I understand it. I can speak to my parents and family members, but I'm not regularly speaking it anymore. I don't live in a community where I speak it often. I do hope to teach my kids it to a certain degree. I don't expect them to be fluent in it by any means. Again, it's not a language that they're going to be regularly using. I would love for, you know, I use little terms, little phrases here and there, like Aja, that means come here, Bani, that means water, like little things here and there. But no, my kids don't speak it. But I would love for them to, yeah, learn at the very least basic words. Next up, what are your best kitchen gadgets you can't live without? 100% my Vitamix. Okay. I use that thing every single day. If you're looking for like a high speed blender, get it. It's so useful. I know there's others out there, but I love my Vitamix. I use it for like my smoothies, blending up muffins, like just all the things. It's so useful. My air fryer also, I recently got the Our Place Wonder Oven. I got the large one. Highly recommend. I love it. I've had a few before in the past. I love this one because it doubles as like a toaster oven, as an oven. So you can bake things in it and not have to like heat up your entire oven for it. It looks cute. It's very aesthetic and it's low tox, non-tox as well. Number 12, birth control options beside the pill. I'm not a fan, to be honest, in hormonal birth control. With all the things that have come out in the last, you know, X amount of years on it, I never took birth control pills. I did have an IUD for a short period of time, but I hated it. I got it removed. And yeah, I think you can successfully follow natural planning. Okay. I do think you can. It does take more work. And of course, you need to like understand your body and your cycle. Maybe get an Oura ring or an Ultra Human ring. That's what I have. That helps to track your body temperature and to give you like a clear understanding of where you're at in your cycle. I also think just understanding your cycle in general as a woman is so important, like what phase you're in. And it just helps you to understand your hormones, why you feel what you're feeling. So even in terms of, yeah, your sex life and birth control, I think it can be really, really, really handy and helpful. But with that said, we have had two surprise babies. So I don't know, maybe don't listen to me, but my husband also, he did have a vasectomy after our fourth. So that, I guess that's our birth control. Number 13, how many followers did you have when you started reaching out to brands? Ooh, I like this one. I always tell people, man, shoot your shot. It doesn't matter how many followers you have. Honestly, I think nowadays brands really love working with micro influencers. So influencers that have smaller followings because they have like usually more engagement and more people are invested in their content. So I don't remember exactly, but I think I had less than 5,000, to be honest, when I first started reaching out to brands and like basically asking for free products. I would just reach out and be like, hey, I'll share something if you send it to me. And that's how it started. And then eventually it spiraled into paid campaigns. But again, you got to build a brand. And brands want to see that you are consistent with content, that you are posting. For me, aesthetic and like the visuals are really important. So what I post, how I post it, maybe that isn't for you. Anyways, I think these are all things to consider. Number 14, a challenging part of working on social media. A challenging part working on social media. Wow, there's a lot of challenging parts, but I guess there's layers to this one as well. I would say off the top of my head, what I think of is obviously comparison. Most of us could say that whether we use Instagram for work or not. You scroll the app, you're automatically comparing yourself, right? And obviously, comparison is the thief of joy. And I think it's really important to having thick skin. And this is another reason why I say my kids will never have social media while they're kids. Because if I myself as a 34-year-old woman struggle with this, my children who are not developed, you know, will absolutely struggle with it. Seeing other people, like whether it's how they look or their homes or their clothes or whatever it is, that's hard. That's hard for anyone, I think. We can all say that. And I think that ties into the next thing, which I would say is really challenging, is consumerism. Like feeling like you always need the newest thing, or like, I'm not gonna look pretty enough if I don't have this, or yeah. I think that's huge, consumerism, feeling like you're constantly fed. At the end of the day, sales is what I do, right? Like I do this as an influencer. I'm selling you products. I'm selling you something. And so I think as consumers, it's our responsibility because I do work on this platform, but I'm also a consumer on this platform. As a consumer, I've just, excuse me, I've learned it is my job to I'm in charge of my finances. No one's forcing me to buy anything. And just because people are constantly like sharing things, that's not like, it's not a bad thing that they're doing that. That is their job. And that is what this platform is made to do. But it is my job to be smart and responsible with my finances and to not feel like I constantly need to be buying things or adding things to my Amazon cart just because people are sharing them. Yeah. Number 15, can you talk about insulin resistance a bit and how you reversed it? Oh my gosh, you guys, this also needs its own podcast episode because another topic that I am just incredibly, incredibly passionate about. If you have been, if you've been on my Instagram for a hot minute, you know that I, over the past year and a half, 2 years, I have been working my booty off to reverse my insulin resistance. Sorry if I'm fumbling a bit here. I am trying to plug in my computer because it's about to die and I have all my questions. My Q&As are all written on here. But yes, insulin resistance. So insulin resistance, fun little conversation here. Because I think that if you're listening to this, it is very likely that you probably have some degree of insulin resistance and you're going to be like, okay, yeah, sure. Well, if you look into it, 85 to 90% of adults have insulin resistance. Yes, 85 to 90%, I don't know, don't quote me on that, have insulin resistance. Basically, what is insulin resistance? And now that I've caught your attention with that, because you're like, I probably have it. It is when your body's cells don't respond properly to insulin. Insulin is a hormone that helps move glucose from your bloodstream into your cells for energy. And because your cells aren't taking in glucose effectively, your pancreas produces more and more insulin to try to keep your blood sugar levels normal. And so over time, this will lead to high insulin levels and eventually higher blood sugar, pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes. So people will often say, well, I don't have insulin resistance because I don't have pre-diabetes. No, guys. Insulin resistance isn't pre-diabetes. It is like a pre-diabetes, okay? Insulin resistance is what you have 10 years before you get diabetes, okay? And so then all of a sudden one day you're going to wake up and you have diabetes and you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't see this coming. Well, no, you should have because you had insulin resistance for so much longer. Does that kind of make sense? Look it up if it doesn't. I also have a highlight on my Instagram titled Insulin. Go look at that. It goes more into detail. Probably phrased and explained a lot better. But yeah, it can also lead to things like fatty liver disease, definitely inflammation, as well as certain cancers and Alzheimer's. They say also Alzheimer's now is like type 3 diabetes. There are so many chronic health issues and diseases that literally stem from this one condition that most of us have. Some people have symptoms that are obviously more obvious, others don't. But I think the biggest cause for it in general, for most of us, is that we were raised on a diet of high carbs, added sugars, processed foods, you know, all the stuff. It increases your blood sugar spikes and it strains your body's insulin response. And that's what it is. Living a sedentary lifestyle obviously also doesn't help. Your muscles are going to be like less efficient at using the glucose when they aren't regularly exercised. Chronic stress also raises your cortisol, which increases blood sugar. And then, yeah, it allows for a worsened insulin response. Poor sleep, hormonal changes, genetics as well. I know for myself, when I went in to get tested for insulin resistance, I already knew that I had it because my sister found out before me. And I looked, then once my eyes were open to what it was and the chronic health issues that it led to, I was like, oh my gosh, everyone in my family has it, which is true. Like, I have family history of crazy chronic health issues and all of them stem from insulin resistance. So there's lots of symptoms out there. Again, go to my insulin highlight and you'll see a list of them. You might have some of them or not, but things like, one of the big things is visceral fat, like belly fat. It's one of the biggest indicators. So if you're having a hard time losing fat specifically in your abdominal area, that is a huge indicator for insulin resistance. Absolutely, you can still have insulin resistance if that is not one, but I'm just telling you, if that's something you struggle with, it's likely that you have insulin resistance. But I don't know if that was helpful at all. That's what insulin resistance is. I worked my butt off to reverse it and I successfully did. I went back in for blood work and my numbers went way low. And I know when I felt it in my body that I know that I reversed it. That's a huge other reason with my postpartum health journey, why I work so hard to feel my best and feel optimal, is because I did so much to reach that point prior to getting pregnant that I want to ensure that I'm just going to stay at that point for the rest of my life. And I did a lot of things. I did work with a naturopath, and I have a personal trainer as well. So strength training is important. Like, you want to make sure that you are exercising, especially after meals. What does that mean? Obviously not having to do a full-blown workout, but movement after meals is really important. I think one of the worst things that we do is we eat and then we just lounge and we just sit around and we don't get up. So simple things like, okay, I have lunch and then I vacuum or I sweep or I play with my kids for 10 minutes if that's all I can do. Or better yet, have dinner and then go for a walk. One of the best things you can do to prevent a blood glucose spike. Also, when it comes to what I'm eating, ensuring that the foods that I'm eating are not processed and yes, low carbs. And if I am having carbs, saving the carbs for after my fiber-filled, nutrient-dense, high-protein meal. Like, I eat that first and then I might have a piece of sourdough after. But I typically try to keep my meals as lower carb, especially in the evenings for supper. It's not that I don't have carbs. I do. But again, if I do, I'm smart about it. I have my meal first. Like, for example, if I'm going to have dessert, yeah, I'll have dessert, but I'll have it after I have my meal, which is high protein, vegetables, fiber filled, all the good stuff. Drinking water, ensuring that I'm like prioritizing sleep the best that I can and rest. So many different habits that you can slowly stack up and just build consistency with. A huge thing for me as well was fasting. And I know this is something that can often ruffle feathers. People have perspectives on it. But I will 100% stand by the fact that therapeutic fasting is what reversed my insulin resistance, was one of the biggest tools. I absolutely swore by it. It was unbelievable. There's a book called Fast Like a Girl by Mindy Pels. I cannot recommend it enough. Look it up, buy it, listen to it. It's really, really good, as well as a podcast called The Fasting Method Podcast. And both of those are completely dedicated to helping reverse insulin resistance and healing your metabolic health issues with fasting. Not intermittent fasting, okay? I'm going to be clear, but it's not just intermittent fasting. It's therapeutic fasting. So I'm talking about longer thought out fasts, doing them with your hormonal cycle. I'm not currently doing therapeutic fast because I am breastfeeding and also my cycle hasn't come back. I haven't got my period back postpartum. So I do look forward to doing it one day. I'm not going to be doing it until I'm done breastfeeding though. But anyways, hopefully that was kind of helpful. Sorry, I kind of just went off there. Number 16, what's one of the biggest projects you've done? Biggest projects. I'm assuming this question's like about, I don't know, like house projects maybe. I guess 100% painting my house a few years ago, I think in the summer of 2023. Yeah. I was not pregnant. I was not breastfeeding. It was like my first little gap of time. And I decided to take on a project, which was painting the outside of my house. I did it myself. We have like a 70s bungalow is what our house is. It was brick. I mean, it is all brick. But the brick was not a nice brick. Like, I firmly believe in keeping the brick and keeping the character of your house now. Like, I think definitely people just like spray white on everything. But I'm telling you guys, this brick was not a nice brick. It was ugly brick. So I knew I had to do something about it. So I painted the outside of it all by myself over the course of the summer with a sprayer that I borrowed from a friend. And then I spent like a couple thousand dollars maybe on paint. I saved a lot of money because I did get a quote on it and it would have cost like $15,000 to $20,000 to get it done professionally. Does it look like it was a professional job? Probably not, but it looks good. We use high quality paint. I think I did a decent job. And anyways, it was fun. I learned something new. Number 17, what does your husband do? And when did you decide to stay home full time? Mark owns and operates an agribusiness. So we farm. We have over 1,500 acres of fresh produce. We have asparagus, peppers, and onions. But we also have a processing facility. And this is something I feel like people don't often know. We process our own produce as well as for other farms too. So what that means is we clean, package, chop, core, peel, brine produce, like all the things for distributors. It's really awesome and it's exciting. And Mark is really amazing at what he does and he's really passionate about it. He owns the business with his dad and his cousin. I would say they all have kind of different roles. Like, his cousin more so manages the farming operations. So yeah, Mark is, he's a businessman. He deals with people and sales and all those things, and he's amazing at it. So that's what he does. Number 18. Oh, sorry, I didn't answer the second part of that question. When did you decide to stay home full time? It was when I was pregnant with my first kid. I had a career job. I was director of a nonprofit. And then I decided I was, after my maternity leave, I wasn't going to go back. At that point, it was simply because my job was so demanding and I loved it. But it was, it was a lot. It was a lot that I knew that I wouldn't be able to, carry on after I had a baby, especially given the fact that Mark owns and operates his own business. And I was basically running this. It was too much. So at that point, I decided to just not return to my previous career, but I didn't have a plan going forward. I had no idea what I was going to do. And then slowly figured it out, I guess. Number 18, something people might not know about me. I don't know, guys. Like I said, I'm an overshare. I'm an open book. I mean, a lot of you do know this because it's not like I don't share about this, but I think some people are often surprised to hear that I hunt. I say this because I had a meeting with my agent the other day and I mentioned it to her that I hunt, and she was like, "What? You hunt? I can't believe that." And she was just blown away by it. So I think sometimes maybe people are surprised about that. But I do hunt. I honestly only deer hunt. I have gone turkey hunting and waterfowl hunting, but deer hunting is what I would say I do every deer week. For us, we have a shotgun week in November, and I don't know how many years it's been now, guys, 8-9 years since I started. And I love it. I really do. Last year I was 7 months postpartum, and I harvested a buck, a little buck, and we enjoyed it over a family dinner. And we still have meat in our freezer from that. But it's something I didn't need to do a full podcast episode on hunting and why I think it's the most ethical way of getting your meat. Tell me if you're interested in hearing more about that. But number 19, how do you get your kids to eat all the delicious meals you make? Oh my gosh, you guys, this is funny. Because I feel like people ask me a lot because I post so much about food and recipes, and you just assume my kids are always eating it, but my kids do not eat it all. Okay. They all go through phases like any kid does. Obviously some are pickier than others. I always try to offer lots of flavors and, all the things, and maybe compared to some people, like some people might look at it and be like, "Oh, wow, your kids eat such diverse foods." But, honestly, my kids will eat chicken strips, and they have grilled cheese and quesadillas a lot of the time. Like I will make food and I'm like, okay, I'll give them a little taste, and I know they're not going to eat more of it, but I got to give them something. So I'll make them whatever. I pack things like that in their lunches. We're balanced here. Okay. Next one is, did you ever think about just having one baby? No, I always wanted more. I always thought I wanted 5 kids. I think I've touched on this before on Instagram, but I always thought I wanted 5 kids. And then I started having kids and I realized, oh my gosh, like my patience. And again, tying back to that other question earlier, like my emotional maturity, my lack of regulation skills, things that I really need to work on, and things that, when you've been wired a certain way your whole life, and then you have to like work your ass off to change that. I think, you realize maybe I don't need to have as many kids as I thought. So we are done at 4, and I always knew I wanted more than one, even after we had our first. Yes, I will say when I was expecting our second, I definitely had those thoughts and feelings I think most moms do, where you're like, I can't imagine loving another baby as much as I love my one and only baby that I have. But then of course, when they're born and they're here, you're like, oh, I absolutely do have enough room and capacity to love both of them. So yeah, wow. We are at over 45 minutes. So that's a lot for one day. I guess we got through 20 questions. That's great. I'll have to do another one of these. Let me know if you enjoyed this and if you want me to do another one of these Q&As. But that is it for now. If you have any questions about anything that I talked about on today's episode, you want to chat more about it, feel free to message me. You can always get into my DMs. My Instagram handle is @JyotiWall. And yeah, that's it for now. Hope you have a good one. I'll catch you next time.